We are back, 2025 Stripe Show Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. I took a little break from the pod there about, what was it, 4 or 5 weeks, I guess. Walked away from the pod, less social media, more time with the family over the holidays, put the phone down, and it was nice. But I'm excited now. I'm ready to go. We're back at it. 2025 Stripe Show Pod is back. This year, a little bit different. We're going to do one pod a week, and we're staying right to our roots, the instruction base, different teacher every single week. And it was only fitting. One of our favorite guests that we've had over the years kicks it off 2025. He joins us from the great state or country now, or what are we calling it up there in Canada? I mean, I don't know. I'm confused now.
If you ask me in 6 months, it might be a state. Who knows?
Shaheen Nakhchivani, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. It's nice and cold out here, so there's nothing better to do than host podcasts at this point.
Yeah, what is it right now? Like, give me in Fahrenheit. I don't get the whole Celsius bit.
It is about minus 10 Celsius, which would be about 15 degrees-ish Fahrenheit.
Wind? You guys get wind?
Yeah, it gets freezing. Your nose freezes up as soon as you walk outside.
Oof. I'm used to that. Like, I grew up in Northern Idaho. That's where I went for the holidays. And it was, it wasn't that cold. I mean, it was like, it got down to like 32, 33. No snow early. Then it kind of snowed in town right before we left. The ski hill has a lot. But, man, it didn't get cold, though. You get down those single digits, and then you get over to Western Montana, and that wind starts blowing, those snow drifts. Yeah, Christmas.
It'll get to like minus 20 Fahrenheit here probably in like a couple weeks.
Oh, wow. So indoors, cool. I mean, I know like you and I kind of built our studios about the same time, and things are good. You guys rolling?
Things are rolling. We're here packed house today, so no complaints. Nice. TGL hopefully gives everybody a little bit of a boost in the indoor side, so we're excited about that.
Yeah, we're filming this on a Tuesday, and so tonight, and this will air on a Thursday, so when people listen to the podcast or watch the podcast, which we appreciate, they're out there on YouTube, join the channel there, or audio, we appreciate your subscription, and leave us a comment if you in a ranking. Of course, that always helps in the ratings, but when our audience listens, this will be Thursday, so Tuesday night, TGL week two. Just south of me here, about 3 hours down in West Palm. We got Tiger and Rory playing tonight. I thought, I adopted the indoor model a couple years ago, moved in. I love it. Got all my technology in here. You see a club fitting going on behind me here with TruSpec. I think it's cool. It's different. It's always going to, people are going to shoot holes through it, but I thought it was pretty cool for week one.
I mean, look, they are doing about as good as they can for an indoor situation, like recreating real grass green that can be modified to whatever slope you want, putting the ball with the highlight of the camera on the exact distance of where you hit it relative to the flag. Like, it's a very, very accurate situation. It's kind of like a mix of indoor and outdoor, I guess, the field that they're going for. It's almost like a hybrid model, which is pretty cool. Haven't seen it in person, but I mean,
50 yards in.
Yeah, it looked pretty interesting.
Yeah, 50 yards in, they play it out. So you actually hit the shot. The green's moving, so it's the actual slope of the green. I mean, it was pretty cool to see the ball hit the green, and then it would light up. It would hit the green in the sim, and then it would light up the actual green itself. And they would put the ball there, and then they would have the real putt. That's pretty spectacular. I can't wait to get down there. I have a good friend who is in charge of the PR, Chris Reimer, and so I've been kind of tuned into it over the last year, and they're putting a lot of time into this, a lot of money into it. There's a growth plan to this whole kind of model with SoFi, and I'm excited to see it.
It's like as excited as like you see the darts world championships of how many people are showing up there and they're going crazy. If they can even recreate like half that model, I think it can be pretty successful.
Yeah, it's funny because I've been 2 years now into this. And before that, running TPC Sawgrass, World Golf Village, Golf Channel days and all that. So like, to be exposed to some great spots where people are coming to take lessons. And of course, those things are inspiring and people come to TPC Sawgrass, they're kind of in awe, on the 17 and Players Championship. And oh my God, there's VJ and there's Jim Furyk. And And so it has that aura, right? And so it's inspiring, and you can see people adapt to that. But I'll tell you, in this studio, what's been crazy is to watch kids come in the studio, and like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds that maybe kind of getting into the game. They don't love it yet, but they're like, okay, I'm going to try it. You know, it's interesting. And to see them really warm up to the simulator and the indoor putting green and kind of the environment that we've created in here. I'm telling you right now, the kids that come in here, they love it. And it makes you feel good, because I'm watching kids walk in for the first time because their parents want to try golf. They're like, no, no, no. And then like 45 minutes later, they're like, I'm in. This is cool. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. We started hosting junior clinics, and honestly, it's been pretty good, because like you can put games now on the launch monitors up. You don't have to keep them entertained for 4 hours, where it's like they're going to a summer camp that they might get bored halfway through and then, you know, start to hate the game. I think it's a very different experience if you could just bring them in for an hour, have some fun on the screen. Everybody's happy. Parents are happy. And they end up walking away like wanting to come back, which I think is the most important part of that. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I got an indoor bar here. We do a lot of events in here. You know, I mean, people will come in here. They'll pop their laptop up while their kids are learning golf. I'm like, hey, you want a beer or a glass of wine? They're looking at me like, what? This is the greatest after-school program in the world. My kid's going to play golf for the rest of their life. This is phenomenal.
So yeah,
it's been fun. And TGL, I think, is going to help our model and what we're doing to advance the game. So we got a lot to cover here, man. You know, we're going back and forth. I've got a long list of, we're going to be looking at some swings here. A lot of the students that you teach, from Stephen Ames to Yannick Paul. I know you work with his twin brother, Jeremy Paul, which we're going to look at that move, which I think is really interesting. Julian Suri, I know you work with, who's a local kid here. I've known him since, you know, he was like 9, 10 years old growing up.
He's out at TPC most of the time when he's practicing, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So we're going to look at some of that, and then I'm going to get into some of the short game as well. I got Parker McLaughlin coming into my studio next week. We're going to be doing an in-studio series live in here. So I want to get into some of the short game stuff. Hideki, you know, he won again 11 times now in the PGA Tour. Interesting swing. Rory playing in TGL. There's some things going on there I want to get your thoughts on. And then we'll do some rapid fire at the end. Show us your swing. I got 4 swings loaded in. All different swings that we'll look at and give some people some individual instruction. But I want to start. I want to start with this guy. Okay, we're gonna go. I just realized that I had my my putting video up there. We're gonna be getting to that in a minute. Here we go. We're gonna look at this one first.
Mm-hmm.
This is Jeremy Paul's got his card, PGA Tour card. Congrats!
First tournament last week, made the cut, finished 40 something, which is a decent start for a guy who's never played a PGA Tour event before. So we're all happy about that.
Yeah. So it's funny because he does have an interesting move, and you and I have chatted about it before in the past. And you know, I'm probably one that gets out there quite a bit in social when, you know, your mid handicaps will show up on your lesson tee, and you'll see that inside takeaway, right? You'll see that inside move, and then they don't handle it quite as well as Jeremy does, right? They'll come over it, and Lou Schaffling and all these types of things start to kind of transpire from there. And oftentimes that first move, and when I say inside takeaway, when you look at the club head, you can kind of see how it gets behind his hands early.
And he's on the extreme end too.
And he's on the extreme of it. Yeah. I mean, like when you, if you were to play this, you know, and stop it halfway, like that club head is behind the hands early. I'm curious. I just want to set the stage. Like when you look at this, like share with my audience a little bit, because we have a lot of teachers that watch this too. Like, how are you managing that first move and what happens after that?
So the thing about Jeremy, I will say, is he has an extremely strong grip, which I think is an important piece to mention, because what you'll notice in his takeaway is his club face doesn't fan open like most recreational golfers would do. From a takeaway that gets that inside, you know, your everyday golfer who's going to walk into your studio, like you mentioned, who's going to create a lot of bad habits, they're going to not only get the club very inside early, but their face angle is going to fan wide open, right? They're going to have some element of forearm rotation. And as soon as the face gets very open, it creates a snowball effect from there, where the golfer then has to try to find a way to shut that thing down. And that can lead to, you know, pitching the club over the plane as an effort to try to start the ball online and do all these you know, residual effects that we don't like. Jeremy overcomes that because his grip is very strong and he keeps the face very, very close in his takeaways. So yes, the shaft is very, let's call it out of position for what we would want to see if we had a preference, like a model, but his club face is not. And that's, I think, a big part of what saves him with the takeaway for starters. The second thing I would say, and this is a philosophy I've always lived by when it comes to takeaways, is like, you should never make a swing change if it's purely aesthetic. I very much follow this rule with all my students. And so if his takeaway is very inside, which obviously in Jeremy's case it is, you have to ask yourself, well, is it penalizing him later on? Right? Like, is it creating a negative situation somewhere down the road that's giving you a reason to change the takeaway if you like look backwards into his golf swing? If you look at Jeremy's position at the top of his swing, okay, and I don't know if you can get it up and pause it for the YouTube watchers.
It's not letting me pause it right now for some reason. We'll have to keep playing it. Yeah.
Okay, that's okay. So what you'll see from the top of his backswing is he gets the shaft down the line pretty nicely.
Yeah.
His club face is not out of position, obviously, because the grip is very strong. And his arm structure gets plenty around him and doesn't really create some sort of like way over the top move. Right. Yes, his hand path goes from being deeper to more out in front of him because he rotates and all that. But his shaft movement doesn't get compromised very much, especially in transition. If you actually look at his club shallows plenty on the way down.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you're looking at a golfer whose arm structure at the top is not really being compromised by the takeaway and the club face angle is still in a good position and the shaft moves really well coming down, then what is the purpose really of changing his takeaway in that scenario? There isn't really one at the end of the day, right? That's kind of how I look at Jeremy specifically. Now, again, recreational golfers are very different. They have a lot of forearm rotation. Their club face gets very open. They create a snowball effect where they have to react to the club face. And so there are problems that stem from the takeaway. Jeremy, for the most part, when you look at his movements, he doesn't really have a lot of bad things going on beyond the takeaway outside of the aesthetics of it, right? So in that scenario, there was never really a reason for us to change it. And we never really changed it since we've been working together.
Yeah. I mean, even like when you look at a Victor Hovland, I mean, he's got not to this degree, but it has a little bit of this look to it. And I think Victor, and I don't know this for sure, but you know, he's changed instructors again.
Working with the guy that used to, our boy TJ.
Yeah. He's working for a guy that used to work for me back in the old PGA Tour Academy days and teaches him, you know, great young teacher. Yeah. And so, you know, Victor, this is kind of what he does. Like he likes to jump around and, you know, and work with a lot of different people. Unfortunately, they're all talented and very smart people. But just watching some of the videos online over the last 2 days, it does look like he's trying to maybe get out of that a little bit. I don't know. It looks like the club looks a little less like old Victor, maybe a little more,
less of that.
So I don't know that for sure. I'm just what my eyes are telling me and watching it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that strong grip really does kind of set the stage here, and he does organize it nice at the top.
If his grip wasn't as strong as it is,
yeah,
the club face would be more open early in the backswing, and that would potentially damage the rest of his move. So I do think having the grip that strong does help him quite a bit.
The other thing he does that, and I want to go to Stephen Ames next, who's another guy that you work with who has won 7 times in the last 2 years. The other thing that Jeremy does is he does make still an adequate turn, right? Oftentimes with amateurs, I got his face on here too, just loaded in. Oftentimes with amateurs, when they go inside, it's countered with a body fault immediately, a sway, a reverse spine angle. Like it's something that the body just doesn't turn as efficiently. Even though he's inside, he's making an adequate turn. His left shoulder's getting behind the ball. His right hip is in a good spot. And then from there, he can, you know, pitch it back and go. So there's a lot of good things happening in and around that first move. And I think, and you and I can attest to this, when a mid handicap comes in and they take it that far inside, whether the face is open or closed, it's usually countered with a bit of a snowball. And with that snowball effect, I think the ceiling really gets limited, you know, for that player who's playing once a week, who's playing, you know, practicing once every other week. Like, things can get limited, the turn can get short, and all of a sudden you're like, man, I can't hit the ball at all. And a lot of it stems back from that first move. Jeremy manages it very well, obviously.
It's funny enough, the videos that you just showed on the screen are the ones that I took myself, because I just saw them like right before the holidays out in Arizona. And one of the things we put a lot of emphasis on that week was getting him to complete his turn in the backswing, because when he gets a little short and a little quick, he can get a little leany towards the target with his upper body. You can kind of see it's still lingering a little bit there. Mm-hmm. And that's where he gets a little steep on the ball, and then he has to back out of it to try to shallow the attack angle out. So in his case, making sure that you're making a full turn despite the club being that inside is vital in helping him as well.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one here. Mm-hmm. I like this dude, Steven Ames.
What a pyramid.
You guys have done some – you've done some really nice work, obviously, 7 wins in the last 2 years. But I read a post that you made about Ames, and I want to talk about this particular aspect. And you were talking about his pelvis at address being a little bit more up underneath him and how that helps him make a deeper turn. Share with the audience what that's about, because I feel like this is one that gets overlooked a lot.
Okay, so I'll start by trying to get the listeners to visualize this. So pelvis really can sit in one of two extreme positions. Either it can be very tucked underneath your upper body. Think of like taking the front end of the pelvis and raising it and pushing it towards the ball, basically. So you, like, your glutes are more under you. Or you can do what a lot of people have said in the past in old school magazines, or what beginners usually do, which is, hey, stick your rear end out behind you. And when you're lower body gets pushed too far behind you, the back end of the pelvis rises a lot. They call that basically anterior pelvic tilt. That's the scientific term for it. And usually if your rear end gets too far out behind you, it can create a lot of bad habits. Number one, it puts a lot of pressure on the lower back. Every time I've tried to recreate that sort of position, even for an online student to show why it's bad, I have a hernia in my L5-S1. I feel it instantly every time.
Yeah.
So our number one goal as instructors is not necessarily just to make players better. It's to protect their body long-term so they can play for as long as they're physically capable of, right? So we always want to protect their body no matter what kind of swing change we're trying to make. So in his case, tucking the pelvis under him was number one to help him with his lower body so that he doesn't feel a lot of pain in his lower back, right? As you get older, you get a little bit more restricted in your mobility. It's only normal. Number two, if your pelvis gets into that position, the one that we talked about of anterior tilt, so sticking your rear end out way too far behind you, it can create a lot of forward bend from the upper body. It can very easily get your weight going too far into your toes. And then from there, it becomes really difficult to load around your hips. Mm-hmm. You feel a lot of tension in your lower back when you're trying to turn. You're going to end up getting restricted. If your turn gets restricted, your hands can start to go up instead of around you. It can cause you to get steep. It can create all these other problems that obviously we don't want to be dealing with as a golfer.
And with that protection of the back and getting in that more posterior, if you will, where it feels like it's like that, you know, the pelvis is a little bit more up underneath you, almost like you're sitting on a stool versus getting so top heavy and hinged forward. You know, like if you're so far hinged forward, you don't have a lot of room to kind of, you know, to turn and get deep in the backswing and or impact, right? And so, like, at address, is it, if I'm hearing you right, he's able to make a deeper turn because of the more posterior at address.
Correct. And obviously, like, either extreme, I would preface it, is not really that good, right? Like, you don't want the rear end sticking out way too far. You also don't want the pelvis so far underneath you that you have to stand super upright and have, like, no knee bend, right? There is a fine line of managing that, but he was certainly on the first scenario where he gets the pelvis just too far behind him. And like you said, like, when you're in that position, it just gets really hard to get your weight going towards the heel of your back foot or turning around you. And obviously that created other problems. So I do believe that tucking the pelvis slightly more underneath you is beneficial for more golfers than not. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm not going to go out there and say that it's an absolute for everybody, because I don't believe that's the case for any golf variable in general. But in his case, it helped him immensely to turn into the hip and load more around him. And a big thing we work on is getting the hands and club a little bit more rounded, because he gets a little picky and elevated when he's swinging poorly.
Yeah, that just happens like when you get older, right? Like I'm starting to push 50 a little bit and getting that thing to work around you gets a little bit more difficult. But that pelvis underneath you, then it's easier to get that right hip to turn and then let that left arm.
Yeah, we're just trying to make the game a little easier for him. That's really what it comes down to.
And again, it's like it's interesting. Like both these guys, like, okay, Jeremy, okay, better turn, left shoulder behind the ball, don't lean left, like get those things complete, then go. Stephen Ames, posture at address, let's get that right hip turning so the left arm can, you know, get a little more around you, and then go and be instinctive and hit it from there. So it's interesting how that ongoing discussion of like the backswing matters, because, you know, the backswing sets the stage for what's going to happen on the forward swing. And more times than not, it just makes the downswing easier.
Steven's feel the last couple of months has been, think of like a draw backswing with a fade downswing, which is draw backswing, very rounded, flatter, right? Yeah. Hands a little deeper, bigger turn, and then fade downswing a lot more, like get the chest more on top, cover it so you don't get stuck underneath with some slide. And usually doing that tends to neutralize them quite nicely. So been good.
All right, we're going to take a minute here, take a little break. I want to get your thoughts here on the tail end of this thing. All right, so for those that were listening, that was a little in-studio promo for our final two guests. It's been kind of fun, Shaheen. I've had J.C. Deacon in here, the head coach for Florida, back in November, and then Marcus Potter, who teaches out of here when he's in town, and his career has really taken off in the world of putting. And to do an in-studio with a live audience has been really cool. And then Parker will be in town. Parker McLaughlin, who, of course, played on the PGA Tour once, short game chef. You call him in social media. He's done really well. One of the top short game coaches. He's going to be in town next week post PGA show. And we're going to do the podcast live here in the studio. And then Players Championship Week in March to round it out. Dana Dahlquist will be here. And so we'll have him in studio. So I'm excited about that. And it transitions us into, you know, this – it seems like now year-long discussion about short game and steep versus shallow. There's always something that kind of captures our industry every single year. And over the last year, I think it's been this short game. And, you know, Joe Mayo, who's a deep thinker, great teacher, you know, kind of has been out there and really spearheading, you know, let's get steeper on it with short game. And I think so much of the discussion in short game and even really probably in full swing, kind of the shallow concept. And so you kind of see this back and forth, get steep, get shallow, you know, where are we? And I just, you know, I'll kind of steer it up. I got some other swings here short game shots that we'll get into, but just like in general, as you've kind of watched that transpire, just your thoughts.
Oh, like anything else, I'm probably somewhere in the middle of that. You know, I don't think that every single golfer should be very shallow. I think that if you're taking a lot of recreational golfers with not a lot of talent, let's say like skill wise, and you get every single one of them shallow, if they don't have the appropriate body movements to make it work, you can dump the club behind the ball pretty easily. And of course, the bounce might be able to save you and offset some of that margin for error, but I don't think it can help enough in many cases. So I definitely think that there's an element of risk if you're getting everybody super shallow. Equally, on the other side of the spectrum, if you get a player who's very, very steep, and we can say steep in two ways. You can talk about the attack angle and like vertical swing plane, right? So if we're talking like shaft pitch getting very steep, oftentimes you'll see a golfer react and they end up hanging back on it to try to get the ball started on a certain line or whatever. So I definitely think that there's an element of risk if you're getting everybody super shallow. Equally, on the other side of the spectrum, if you get a player who's very, very steep, and we can say steep in two ways. You can talk about the attack angle and like vertical swing plane, right? So If we're talking like shaft pitch getting very steep, oftentimes you'll see a golfer react and they end up hanging back on it to try to get the ball started on a certain line or whatever. So I definitely think that both extremes in many cases are, you know, a little bit more difficult to handle for the everyday golfer. Obviously, when it comes to tour players are a completely different conversation. I don't even put them in the same realm with each other.
Right. Yeah.
You know, what I do with the tour player and what I do with a regular golfer in my studio is night and day. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the first component of interest, at least for me, when I think about short game is the amount of shaft lean, right? The amount of shaft lean at address. Yeah. This is Colin Morikawa, who works with Parker. And I think, you know,
this is a relatively new relationship, I believe, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think a short game that's improved and really also some putting now too. I mean, I think Colin's really started to turn the corner putting with the work with Steven Sweeney. So I think, you know, Morikawa is really in a nice position here, I think, going into 2025 with, I think, some momentum in the world of short game and putting. But like you look at Colin there, I mean, that's a pretty neutral shaft, right? At address. You know, now that thing's going to come in a little more forward than it was at address. But I mean, for the most part, you look at this, this is like a medium type of trajectory shot. He's not throwing this way up in the air. I mean, you know, that's a pretty neutral shaft. And then you go to a guy that likes to lean a little more forward, and that's Spieth, you know, yeah. And he's the kind of guy that, you know, seems to be a little more comfortable getting that handle a little bit more out in front. Now all these guys can do various things with the shaft, and they all look, they can lean at 10, 12, 14 forward. They can lean at 1 or 2 forward and get the shot. Like they got it all. Mm-hmm. But I do think like there is maybe a preference to some degree where like, I do think Spieth and Scheffler, they like to lean on it a little bit. They like to get that handle forward and get the leading edge on the ground a little bit more. Where, you know, maybe others, you can tell maybe not as much, right? Like they're not going to be as aggressive with the amount of shaft lean. But I think for most amateurs, you're kind of teaching a stock shot. Look, I'm probably going to go somewhere probably in between what I'm seeing with Spieth and what I'm seeing with Colin.
I agree. That's kind of what I was prefacing at the beginning of this, which is, I think that both extremes are equally no good for the everyday golfer, you know?
Yeah.
In my opinion, the most important piece of this puzzle on either end is getting the body to move the way you need it to move to make it work. Because you could be shallow or steep and struggle with contact issues if you don't have the appropriate pivot to make it work, right? At the end of the day, if you go back to Spieth, the one thing that stands out to me the most in this scenario is upper body stacked a little left, moves even slightly further left in the backswing, and then stays left in transition but just extends his spine up. But he doesn't extend it up and back. He just extends it up and very much keeps it left, which ensures the better contact on the ball with the amount of shafting that he's delivering.
Yeah, and I think that's a move that I think Joe Trackman Maestro, Trackman Maestro, right? That's what they call
him. I believe so.
So Joe, I think, has done a good job. And I remember, and I got Victor here too, and this is, I think, Joe taking this video. You can see that head right there. You know, that head moving forward. I do think that's something that did tend to help Victor at the time. Like
when you're dealing with a player who has that much shaft lean around the greens, which obviously some of his full swing mechanics are going to carry over. It's only normal. Mm-hmm. When you have that much shaft lean, you really have to ensure for the most part ball first contact. So in a case like this, getting the chest to move towards the target is getting his low point forward enough to help with the amount of shaft lean he delivers, which is why I think Victor was so successful doing this pattern.
Yeah, definitely. You can see his head moving forward there. You can also see it with Spieth, who's always done this. I mean, Scheffler does it a little, not as much, but
it definitely varies the quantity. But look at when he's extending, how he's still staying left. That's the key to me, is he's not extending and going back this way. He's extending up, but he's staying on the front side of his body.
And I go back to like, and I've had this conversation with Parker, like back in high school. Okay, you know, 58 degrees, whatever. Leaning the shaft way forward, but also like opened up to the side, you know, feet, shoulder. I was like, you know, everything was kind of open. And so, you know, you're really where now you look at this, these guys are pretty square. I mean, maybe a little open in the shoulders, a little open in the upper.
The days of aiming way across the ball at setup are pretty much done and dusted at this point.
Yeah. And I think that amount of open, at least for me, and I hear this conversation a lot, that low point would get back too much. And then you would lay the sod over it, and then it's like, oh my God, right? And then that would be in your mind where it's like, oh my God, I laid the sod over it. When's that going to happen again, right? And so then you would anticipate it, and your hands would start getting active, and then you'd hit it right in the forehead and blade it over the green. And so, like, we've all been through that journey of, oh, Jesus, like, fat, thin, you know, and then everything else in between is pretty good. So you look at the progression of all this and thinking about it, you know, these guys are pretty square. I kind of prefer Shaheen. I like the Schaffling somewhere in between these guys, you know, a little lean, not crazy, a little bit, but, you know, ball middle-ish, maybe a little back, maybe, but upper body, spine more neutral, torso slightly open, not much, just a little. And then that gets that sternum a little ahead of the ball. And then, like you said, you know, look, if you want to take it back and just feel like you go a little more left, and then
as long as you're ensuring that it's getting there by the time you get to the ball, you're fine. That's the key for me.
You just can't back up.
That's the biggest killer of short games, in my opinion, regardless of what the shaft is doing.
Yeah. You can see it here again with Victor. And then, you know, you go back to, and this is a slightly different shot, but Morikawa doesn't strike me as one that's as much left as we just talked about. No. You know,
in fact, I would argue he kind of looks like he goes a little up and back and makes it work just fine.
Let's talk about that kind of finish up here with a little spine extension on this. Talk about what that means to the audience through impact, spine extension.
So spine extension, you can just think of like your spine extending, head is rising, body is getting taller. Really, the key of all this is not so much that the spine's extending, it's that you're taking the low point and you're raising it out of the ground. So if you stay flexed too long with your spine, so too bent over as you're turning, it gets really easy to dump the club into the ground. Or what you'll see a lot of times is golfers will then try to raise the low point by losing arm structure or doing something else to get it out of the ground. Whereas I can keep my arms nice and connected as long as my spine is moving up through the ball, which you'll see with most really good tour players around the greens, you can keep the arms connected and not have to sacrifice something within your arm structure. So your radius, your width to the ground stays consistent. But as you're doing it, you're getting that low point out of the ground, so you're not just dumping the club behind the ball.
And spine extension is not, you're not backing up.
Not backing up. Going upwards, not backwards. Big difference.
Right. Yep. You're not staying down.
No, you're not. Most tour players don't.
No, you're not staying down. You're working up as you're rotating.
Working up and staying left usually is a pretty good combination for most people.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. All right, good stuff. It's going to be fun next week. I'm excited to kind of go through that. I've learned a lot from he's been on the podcast a couple times, but do it, you know, in person. We're going to go 2 straight hours, a lot of different shots. We'll video that next week and then air it the following week on the platform here. All right, let's go to I do want to get to Rory here as well. We touched on TGL, but I'm going to bring in this swing here next. Here's Hideki. I mean, this guy's turning on all of a sudden. Speaking of good short game, I mean,
best player of all time now.
Yeah, I mean, people get caught up in you know, Hideki, you know, his swing and the pause, which he's trying to get rid of a little bit right now. But let me tell you something: the stuff what we just talked about around the greens, that dude has it in spades. That guy's short game is sick. When he gets it going,
I feel like what's held him back in the past has always kind of been a streaky putting, hasn't it?
Oh yeah. I mean, his putting's always been
hot and cold. When it's hot, he wins because he's such a good ball striker.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And he's not incredibly long either. I mean, he really isn't. You know, he's 300, but he's not like busting it out there with, you know, Cameron Champ or anything like that. I think like Xander's probably 10 yards past him. But his short game, man, he can hit a lot of great, cool golf shots with different face angles and shaft angles and
creativity, man. Creativity around the greens.
Big time. You look at his swing, all right? And here's one, and here's where I want to go with this. Like, this is from a couple of years ago. This is probably one of the best Hideki swings I've seen. And like, you see that club pretty much down the line, even the face right there is kind of matched up as to his left arm. And that's as square as you will see Hideki's face.
I feel like in the past, when he first came on tour, he was certainly more laid off and open. Yeah, that's kind of
right there. Look at that. I think he kind of, again, I don't know this, but when I watch Hideki, he always looks like he's trying to get the club more down the line and the face more shut.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, not a ton of hip turn, knees very bent, makes it hard to do too.
Right, right. Which is always fascinating, right? Because he's always been, to me, like a 90s player, a 90s, early 2000, pelvis level, right knee flexed, rotate the face more open. You know, Ernie Els. It's like a Japanese Ernie Els.
The way I always look at golf swings, okay? If you're not going to do something that's going to help you with the club movement with your pelvis, so if you're not going to load more into the hip to help you turn more, and turning more helps get the club more down the line, if you're not going to do that, you have to now work twice as hard within the arm structure to get the club there, which is probably why he's battling it all the time or constantly working on it, let's say.
And he never seems to change his grip. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say Hideki has the best set of hands in golf.
Definitely up there, for sure. I mean, you wouldn't assume that somebody with this type of backswing alignment would be as good of a ball striker as he is, let's be real, just based on our own understanding of the game. Yeah.
I mean, his hands are, if they're not the best in golf, they are. I mean, I mean, Scotty's got to have the best hands in golf. I mean, Scotty's one, Hideki's two, is how I would put it.
And all time, where do you put Phil in that? Because Phil's got to be up
and
there.
And Phil, no, all time, that's golf. Different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Discussion. All time, and Phil's one.
I mean, with his golf swing mechanics that we know, I would say so too.
Yeah. Yeah. But let's go back to the discussion of what we had for a moment with Jeremy, in that, okay, it was inside, but he makes a good turn, arm structure at the top, shaft does nice things coming down. All right, we're cool.
Mm-hmm.
Amateur player, they don't do all those things, right? And so most times you gotta clean that up. Okay, let's go to the club face with Hideki. Hideki gets club face. I'm telling you, at times that face is open. Like that club face starts hanging. Anytime, folks, I mean, the camera angle has some merit here, but just generally speaking, let's say the camera's in a good spot here. Like when you start seeing that face hanging to the left of the shaft, like, and you'll see that with Hideki, that face is open. Like you've got some work to do to get that club face back to square. And this dude will take an open face, and the shaft will do really good things in transition, and he will come down and he will lean the shaft adequately forward and square that club face up. And it's just time and time again. Now, amateur player comes in the studio, for me, I see that face start hanging open like that. I don't see the shaft do good things and on the downswing. And I certainly, more times than not, don't see forward shaft lean when I see a club face that starts hanging open.
Well, if the face is open and doesn't close on the way down, keep in mind, the face angle being open at the top of the backswing is plenty okay under the assumption that you're able to close it before you get to the bottom, right? So you can have a lot of extension on the lead wrist or have a weaker grip. And if you do the right things in transition, you can get the face in a strong enough position. You're fine, even if it's open at the top. Yeah. Most recreational golfers obviously don't do that, right? Their face is open at the top. It stays open coming down. How are you going to now square it up? Either you're going to have way too much forearm rotation, or you're going to release it early, deliver too much loft, and that's another problem in itself. So I think that Hideki's swing kind of has a Sung Jae-im's swing.
It does, to it, yeah.
Where it's a little more laid off. Now, Hideki's maybe a little bit more open than Sung Jae at the top, but both of them manage the face really well coming down, given where they are at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good comp for sure. I think like Sung Jae will go to that left wrist early in transition. I mean, you could see that thing flex early. And oftentimes the face, like you'll see the face kick around to the other side of the shaft right away.
Actually, I have a before and after image literally of that exact comp that you're talking about. of Sanjay's.
I think it's the one I sent you. It's the one I posted. Remember?
Could be. Very possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so with Hideki, you'll see him carry it down a little bit and then kind of gradually close it. And usually a player like this is not going to have a ton of shaft lane. He's going to have enough, but he can hit some beautiful long irons, you know, when you start kind of seeing this kind of action and club face at the top. It's just fascinating. I mean, Hideki is just, he's just cool, man. Like I like watching him. I don't like watching him, you know, kind of throw his arms down when he hits it to 3 feet. That kind of drives me nuts. You know, when he's acts like he hits a bad shot
Didn't he just do that when he won the tournament and it was like dead center touch fairway?
Yeah. I mean, that kind of drives me nuts, but in fairness, I've
had my fair share of tour players pull one-handed shots because they struck it poorly on the face and it ends up in a good result where your intention maybe wasn't exactly how the ball flew in the air.
Yeah, right. But Hideki does it a lot. Like you could tell he gets a habit of doing it. And but as far as just his craft and like watching him go to work, his creativity around the greens, and his, you can tell he's always grinding on his putting too. He put that quarter on his putter and was trying to keep it on there. I mean, he's just a fascinating dude, man. I really enjoy watching him play. And I mean, he's, like I said, he's got 11 wins now. You know, obviously won the Masters after winning the Century. Open face, folks. I think that just to put a bow on this, I mean, you start rotating that face open going back and you're a mid handicap.
You need to have a discussion.
You need to have a discussion with your coach. Like, okay, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing around this club face to, in the way my swing works? Do I need to get the club face in a stronger position in order for me to develop on the downswing and achieve a more reliable impact? Those are discussions and things that we're fixing all the time in the studio, all the time. Right.
I cannot stress enough how like tour players are an entirely different breed and should be treated as such.
Yeah. All right. Let's finish up with this guy before we go to rapid fire with some show us your swing. We got a lot of swings. So Rory, you know, I've been watching him over the last 4 or 5 months, and I think he's had every swing device on his body to try to get that club pointing more left. That's Rory back in his glory days when he's winning everything, including major championships on the right. That was Rory,
leaders, last year, more cupped, elbows more retracted behind them and flying, clubs more across the line. It's going to be a little steeper early in transition, shallow a little later, easier to get stuck on the left.
Yeah. I sent a text middle of last year to a really well-known analyst at Golf Channel. And I said, why doesn't Rory just put the club where he did on the right? I said, that's when he played his best golf. That's the only difference.
Just try to line it up there at the top of the backswing and not worry
about it. Just get there and then just hit it. And he's like, well, his answer to me was that he can't get there anymore.
In fairness, it's possible that he's got a limitation within his right shoulder that prevents the arm from being as externally rotated as it is. Yeah. You know, that's the tough part too about analyzing a lot of tour players, especially like for the analysts on TV, is if you don't know really everything that's going on in his camp, not only what he's trying to do, but what he's physically able to do now versus before, it's easy for us to say, for example, that he should be on the right, but if he can't physically get there, he's got to find an alternative way to
So he can't physically get there.
Personally, I don't believe that he can't get there. Like, yeah, I 100% think, you know, maybe this is just like the ego in me as a coach who works with tour players. But if I work with Rory, I'm pretty sure I can get him there pretty comfortably. But I'm not the one working.
It's just fascinating.
It's easy to say that on your computer, you know?
Yeah. And so now he's, you know, so I watch him going through all these different devices. And that's what he looks like. He's trying to do that on the right.
Yeah. It sounds like he's very well aware of where he was when he was playing his best and what's happening now. You
know? It's just funny how, why did it get to that on the left? Maybe it was an injury that we don't know about. Maybe it was something that kind of caused that club to kick over on the left. But, you know, that little steep across the line on the left, like the way his arms were coming down, like they work straight down. That's where he kind of, you know, he gets a little under it and he can hit those.
I mean, Rory has always been Rory has always been one of the tour players who's got more lateral shift than most on tour in transition. And what we know about being very lateral and not opening up right away is your hand path is going to drop, right? So if you're from a deeper position and a little across and your hand path drops, boy, you're going to have some trouble because your hands are going to get stuck behind you and the club's going to be a little steep early in transition. That's hard to manage, in my opinion.
Yeah. And the discussion came from that, exactly that, right? The way his arms work, the lateral motion, get under it, lots of blocks. He'd hit that club face pull, you know, the club face would kick around. And so that's where the discussion came from. And it'll be interesting this year to see if his club does look more like that on the right this year. Because I think that is his single goal right now, is trying to get to that point. I don't know that, but just based off, again, watching videos, I can't imagine that's not his goal on the right.
Here's the thing. You look at a guy like Rory and you look at the left position, right? And then if you're a coach in that situation, you're asking yourself, okay, what are the possible options that a player like this has? Well, the first option is to get the club into a spot where you don't have to manage it later. It's already in a good position. That would be the right image, right? It's already a little laid off. It's already a little external. He doesn't have to do too much. Even if the arms drop a little bit, the club's already shallow. He can eventually turn and make it work. Yeah. If he continues with the image on the left, he now has to reroute the club better, get the hand path back in front of him better, and then rotate earlier with a little less slide to make it work. Yeah. That's a lot of changes in one to manage, first of all, that I don't think the tour player is going to do. Second of all, Rory's never really been a guy who's just covered it with no lateral. Like he's always going to shift because he shifted that much his whole life. Trying to get him to do something that different, probably not going to happen. So his best option in this case is probably to try to work to get closer to the right image. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. All right. A little message here from my partner.
If you're like most golfers, you blame yourself when you miss a short putt. So after you hold back the urge to throw your putter in the lake, don't do that. You try to fix your putting stroke. But how long does that last? 1 week, one round, one hole? There's a company called Lab Golf that doesn't think you should be blaming yourself. That's because all putters have this thing called torque, which means the putter face is trying to twist during stroke, so you grip it like a snake. What Lab Golf did is they figured out how to make putters with no torque. They call it lie angle balance, and you have to feel it to believe it. I did. The Lab Golf putter, you don't have to use a funny putting grip to try to keep the face square. You can putt it any way you want because Lab Golf putter stays perfectly square by itself. It's effortless. To see how much easier putty can be, head over to labgolf.com.
So I've been spending a lot of time with these putters, and they're great. They're great clubs. I've been following them for the last 2 years, and had Sam Hahn, I'm the owner, on the podcast at the end of last year. And the sweeper. Look at this. I got to tell you that's the Mez One Max, and that's the one Will's out lover one with. I needed to make it a touch longer so I can get my left forearm down just a little bit more parallel. So I wish I would have went just about another inch and a half longer. But it's you're gonna see more and more of the sweeper, and then this is the DF3. This stock one. I was using this. I just got the new one, the Oz one. That's the one Adam Scott designed. Making everything. Telling you. Everything. Untwist.
I got no experience with these putters, so it's hard for me to comment on them, but if you're enjoying it, it's good.
Yeah. All right. You ready? The first one.
Yes.
First one is from Twitter. Barrett Coakley, let's take a look. Here we go. Barrett Coakley sent his swing. Didn't get any feedback on what the ball flight is, but I'm going to play that one more time so you can see it, Shane. Here we go. Mm-hmm.
You can definitely make some assumptions of what the ball flight's doing.
Okay. What do you think?
I would imagine his big miss is probably a pull hook, given how strong the face is coming down, especially late in the swing, and the club gets a little underneath. Very picky with the hands and arms, a lot of right elbow retraction at the top, which kind of moves the club pretty across the line late in the backswing. And then from there, it almost looks like his hips start to fire a little early because obviously they didn't have a ton of load in the backswing, and it gets the arms and chest kind of a late. So the arms and the hands look a little stuck coming down. A little late shallow move with the face strong is not typically ideal. You're going to either block it or hook it pretty often. So If it were me, getting him a little bit better loaded into the hips so that he doesn't get stuck with that separation in transition as much, and keeping that right elbow a little bit more external going back, getting the club a little bit more down the line would help him instead of like retracting and getting across at the top.
So when you say loaded, that get the right side of the pelvis higher, turning a little deeper.
Correct. Yeah.
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 So right hip, Barrett, turning a little deeper, a little more up and back behind you. That right elbow, you and Rory, that thing pinched in a little bit. So that shaft gets a little more laid off, or what it feels that way. And then from there you should feel like you can, you know, you can rotate a little bit, a little cleaner left.
I definitely think his whole sequence of his move would be a lot better because he wouldn't get so separated between the hips and chest if he loads better.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to, how about this guy? That's John Gruden. That's John Gruden in Barstool. How about this? Man, slowed this one down a little bit. I had to slow it down because it was so fast.
I mean, posture, obviously not very good at setup. I definitely would like to see him standing a little taller. Get those hands a little bit more space because I do think they're a little too low to the ground. Mm-hmm. And then obviously from there, kind of similar to the last guy, just in regards to the hip turn, you know, he keeps his pelvis very level. You can actually see his right knee reflex too early. Mm-hmm. Pelvis gets very level. Obviously, he doesn't really turn into the hips, so the hands have no depth, meaning they just get really, really high. And obviously he rotates his forearms a bunch, so the club face gets wide open, the lead wrist is very cupped, and then he has to manage that at the bottom, which is no good. He's gonna throw the hands and try to square it up that way. Yeah. Easy to hit really high pull fades doing that.
See, coach, maybe coach is gonna see this. You know, this one takes a little more work. I posted this swing. I said this particular swing takes more work because I bet you Gruden, if he played enough, I bet you he's hitting it fairly straight. I bet you he can hit a lot of straight shots, even though the face is wide open. Like the way he's kind of letting the shaft out at the bottom, like, you know, he's probably hitting it pretty high, but he's probably squaring it up decent. And so to your point, you're like, hey, we got to get that face more shut at the top. And then he comes down and he's like still throwing it. Now the ball's going left. And that's where he's got to get his pivot working better, right? He's got to get, you know, he needs to get
Just gets the face stronger, he's probably just going to hit a lot of pull draws. Let's be real. He'll gain a ton of distance. He'll compress it better, but he's going to miss way left unless he changes something else to match it.
Yeah. It's almost like you got to get – you could probably go either way there. You could be like, okay, let's get the face stronger, then the body. Or maybe, you know what, leave the face. Let's get the body working better, and then we'll incrementally get the face to be more shut.
Yeah, you're just bringing in a lot of pushes and push fades potentially if you get the body moving better first and don't manage the face. Let's put it that way.
That's the point. Like, you got to do them together. Like there's two buckets that need to happen there for him to feel like, oh, okay, I mean, I'm
face and path control the golf ball, and both of his are working a very specific way to hit that pull fade, right? So if you change one, the other one needs to change too.
Gotcha. We just need like to give us 2 or 3 hours. And we've got you. All right, here's Jacob Rouse. A little love for our lefty here.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. His hand path just shoots to the moon.
Look at that. Kind of dips it back underneath, though, on the way
this
down.
This is one of those situations where a player like this needs to understand the full roadmap of how to get better, because he's got obviously a super upright arm plane. Trail elbow, I should specify, a little bit retracted. So his left elbow, club tips a little bit more across, right? And then from here, he actually manages the shaft extremely well. He pitches the shaft position, shaft shallows nicely, but he obviously has a bunch of side bend to offset how high his hands are to get them to drop in transition. You'll notice his hand path doesn't get crazy out in front of him relative to where they were at the top. It's because he's finding a way to lower them by tilting a lot to his trail side. And so that's a situation where if you get the hand path any deeper, in theory, that helps him in the long run. But in the short run, if he still side bends, he's going to get way stuck. Like, his attack angle would probably turn positive and he would hook the crap out of the ball. Excuse my language, right? So this is a situation where, again, kind of two pieces that work really well together, you have to change both. The arms being as upright as they are with the amount of side bend he delivers on the way down to drop them back down. So if he wants to get the arms ever a little bit more rounded, he would need to equally offset and remove some of the trail side bend he has in transition to get back on top of the ball, or get the club back to the ball, let's say.
Yeah, I think another one that would take a little bit more time. There's easier fixes in development in the game. I think these last two are a little bit more complicated and thorough because sometimes, and tell me if you agree with this, sometimes like you can fix something and then as a result, you're pretty confident that other things are going to follow on its own. Like you're not, you probably don't even have to talk about it. It's just going to happen. And then the other side of that is you could fix something, but you immediately need to fix something else with it for that golfer to feel like, okay, I'm getting better. Because if you don't, if you leave the second piece out of it, like it can get really hairy. To your point, you start rounding out that right arm here more around him and he keeps backing up with side bend. I mean, that dude, that he might whiff it. You know, like he'll
shank it or bottom out like 4 inches behind the ball.
Yeah. So, you know, so he needs to understand both pieces because they probably need to be coached up individually and have its own identity. Where, for example, if someone comes in here and the face is open and they're diving across the top, all right, I'm going to fix that face, get it more organized. I mean, after about 8 or 9 swings, they're like, man, I should probably try to start the ball more to the right. Yeah. And, you know, and so all of a sudden they start doing things. And it just evolves where this needs the discussion of both pieces.
Yeah, especially early on because they're so extreme in their movements.
Yeah, yeah. All right, one more. 14 years old. This is Phil. Phil Hildale.
Good move of the ball.
Yeah, I like this.
Sneaky pure golf swing. Yeah. I mean, the one thing that stands out to me is obviously near the top of the backswing, the lead wrist just gets very cupped and the club gets very across. And the way in which a player like that is shallowing the club is by really a lot of forearm rotation in transition. And if your face already wasn't very strong before you did it to shallow the club, the face is going to fan open. So to me, what stands out the most is like early into his downswing, his club face gets very open. And then obviously he's got to swing pretty hard left there to make it work. So I would argue if you just get the lead wrist flatter, it would clean up a lot of his issues. Let's put it that way.
Interesting to see his grip. From face mm-hmm. on, too, mm-hmm. you know, just to see what that grip combination. But if you, yeah, to your point at the top, you're saying get that left wrist flatter and the right wrist more extended.
The reason that would be my suggestion is just because it would also reduce the amount of overall looseness at the top of the backswing. You know, if you get the lead wrist a little flatter, it would prevent the club from being as across the line. It would probably limit the amount of rotation of the forearms in transition. So just the overall like bouncing from one position to the other, it would be a little bit tighter and cleaner for him. Yeah. But if for whatever reason he likes the feeling of what he's doing with the forearms and the wrists and all that, then he would just need to strengthen his grip to make it work better.
Love it. Shaheen, you're the man. I can keep going. I know you got other stuff to do. But tell the people where they can get a hold of you. I know you got your app, the Sneed app, and you do a lot of online lessons.
I do, yeah, yeah. So I'm a co-founder, actually, in this online platform called Sneed, which is where I do all my online coaching. So if ever you want to find me on there, just search my name on the platform. You can find me pretty comfortably. Or for those of you watching on YouTube, you see my handle is actually on the name there. So Shaheen Golf, which is actually stems from my nickname, which kind of stuck over time. But basically, you can find me on any social media platform under that username. So. Instagram, Twitter, whatever. I'll be there.
Good stuff, man. We I appreciate it for coming on. We covered some ground there. I mean, Jeremy, Paul, Stephen, Ames, mm-hmm. Parker, Hideki, Rory, Barrett, John, Jacob, and Phil. A lot of golf swings. I'm sure I left somebody out. But lots to think about, lots to consider. We're gonna be doing Show Us Your Swing each week. So feel free to shoot me an email if you want of your swing, travis@travisfultongolf.com. And you can go to travisfultongolf.com as well and check out the programs. We'll be back next week, just confirming right now who that's going to be. Then the following week, we'll air Parker McLaughlin, who will be in studio. Till next time, Shaheen Nakhdavani, thank you, my man. Have a great week.